When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? Well, that's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies. And even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
I think we should start things off and say happy anniversary to you. Happy first birthday.
And happy anniversary to you, too.
Thank you, sir. $2 Life has been around a year. That's really awesome and crazy, and I want to say fast, but also, you know, we've been in quarantine for 8 months. It feels very long, so it feels simultaneously fast in the effortless sense, you know, doing this with you as something I really love doing, and it just feels so free and fun and joyful. But then, you know, then a year is a long time on the other hand.
Well, here we are 30 episodes in now.
30.
Right, we've done 30 episodes, and we started out kind of sharing our love of 3 o'clock High. That was one of the reasons why the show kind of became what it is today. And here we are as the 30th. Our guest on today's episode is Richard Tyson, Buddy Revelle, the man that we both looked at and said he is one of the greatest bully characters of all time. And then we get to meet the man. You're right. This time that we're in right now, unfortunately, we weren't able to do this in person. He was in Alabama. We were in Los Angeles. But I felt like he could have punched us through the phone if he wanted to.
Yeah, he's a presence. You just feel his Buddy Revelle intensity. I was happy there wasn't a locker nearby. Or some brass knuckles, for that matter.
As intimidating as Richard can be when he's in character, the sweetness of the man came out in this interview. What a story he has to tell, from the beginning to now, how he got to LA, how he went back to Alabama. It's a crazy story. It's a wild ride. And he's had quite a career in Hollywood, and he took us along that journey. That journey felt like a serious roller coaster.
Richard has been living in Alabama for, I guess, the last 3 years or so. That is where he's from, and that is where we chatted with him via satellite.
Richard told some great stories. He reminisced about his career in Hollywood. We found out about the backstory behind meeting Casey Shamosko for the first time and what that caused.
The star of 3 o'clock High, Jerry.
His motivation behind his character in Kindergarten Cop. Really fun stories from a guy who's really fascinating. And it was an honor to have him on our show.
Truly. I guess on that note, we'll just say buckle your seatbelts and enjoy the ride.
With Richard Tyson.
It is 3 o'clock High here in LA. And then we just were kind of talking about this whole scenario as if, you know, if Jerry got to the parking lot, but he was on, wasn't on East Coast time. And then, you know, it's like, I thought you were going to fight at five and then it's actually three, you know, that would have made a much different movie, but
yeah. Yeah. There wouldn't have been a fight, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was born at 3 o'clock. You know,
are you serious?
And I'm serious. Wow. And the first person to ever ask me to be in their movie when I left Alabama with $100 on the Greyhound bus, it was Steven Spielberg.
Oh my God.
That's fantastic.
Now every time I meet anyone else trying to decide if I should be in it, I'm like, look, Spielberg got it right. 3 o'clock high, go look at it.
Right.
Richard Tyson, we want to officially welcome you to our show. In all sincerity, it's an honor to have you on. I'm not going to lie. There's going to be a few moments in this interview where I may confess that I tried to act like you, look like you, wanted to be you, et cetera, et cetera.
Maybe just confess it now. We'll get it out of the
way.
It won't be
it
as like awkward later. Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it was just, wearing a thermal.
Just don't make me mad, Jerry.
Oh, my God. whether I was wearing a thermal with a t-shirt over it to look like you in 3 o'clock high, or whether I
there
cut the sleeves off my denim shirt to look like you in Hardball. I'm not going to talk about what I want to do to look like you in Two Moon Junction, but we'll get there.
All right, my black drummer friend, he goes, man, in that Two Moon Junction, when you see that girl and you got that long coat on and you're like walking across, he goes, bam, bam. He was like, I went and bought one of those coats.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I did the same.
Zach's wearing one now.
I am wearing a Buddy Revelle t-shirt that obviously you can't see, but we'll probably post it online.
Send you some photos.
But honestly, it's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks for being on $2 Late Fee.
Yeah, I remember late fees. I had to pay them every time I showed up.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, right.
That's right.
I mean, can we just jump right into that question about Steven Spielberg? Like, how in the hell? And by the way, you can curse on our show. You don't have to be restricted. There's no censoring going on. Just so you know.
That's better.
There you go. Does it feel better?
Yeah, it does.
Can we talk about Steven Spielberg? How that all came to be?
Yeah, man. So I left. I'll try to make it short. This story gets longer and longer. Finally, someone asked me to write a book. I should.
Yeah.
But I left on the Greyhound bus from Mobile, Alabama. My brother, he says, I counted them. There's 47 people and your mother to see you go be in the movies. You better do it. I'm like, give me the damn ticket, man. And by the way, that's 48 people. Your mother is a person, you know? And I go to L.A. I'm out there. I ended up the Hollywood and Vine, man. I ended up there, and I see the YMCA sign. And I went over there. There's a guy behind the counter. I said, how you doing? I'm Presbyterian. You know, I won the judo award 3 times, blue ribbon 3 years in a row in my YMCA in Mobile. And, the guy goes, you want a room, man? I'm like, yeah, I would. He goes, well, look, it's $9 a night. You don't need any of that other shit. You know, I'm like, okay. I went upstairs. I hadn't eaten since Arizona. I go up to my room. I cracked the door and opened the window so I could get a breeze through it. And I had the lights off. I was just tired, you know, just emotional, actually. And all of a sudden, this guy barges into the box and says, what the hell are you doing? You can't sell anything in here. I'm like, what? I don't have anything to sell. What would I sell? What do you mean, sell? And then I look down at my body. I'm like, oh, the guy thinks I'm a prostitute. He thinks I'm a fucking prostitute.
Oh,
I'm like, he goes, that's the signal. If you leave your door like that, you can't be selling you. I'm like, no, man. I didn't know. Here, let me close the door. Good God.
So what is the signal?
Yeah, what's
just
this for?
To leave your door
ajar?
Edification? You just leave it open a certain way?
No, you just put a shoe in the door like you're trying to get a breeze to come through.
Ah,
I guess. I didn't know the signal. I'm like, shit, that's the signal? Okay.
The old prostitute
well,
signal.
Let me yeah, let me go sweat in the room. I'll be fine, you know. So I went to a cafe. It said a petite steak for $3. I'm like, okay, or $2.50, I think. And I go to the counter. There's an old man sitting there. And I said, where's the closest studio? MGM. That's out in Culver City where it used to be. And I was there at 8 a.m. And I sneaked in towards the gate that you could drive a truck through, but it was a chain link fence. And you could only walk through it one person at a time because there was a guard shack right there, you know. And I'm walking by the big white mansions on the left that were in Gone with the Wind. Pretty imposing for the first day guy.
Yeah.
And I'm about 25 feet away from, and I'm like, there's no guard in the shack. The door is open. Oh, hell, man, look at that. That's fantastic. And about 10 feet more, the guy shows up. Mm-hmm. And he's looking right at me, and I'm walking towards, and I'm like, all right, I'm turning right. I'm going to go around and see if I can jump over the fence somewhere. Yeah. It's a 30-foot fence with barbed wire and cameras. It looks like Attica. You can't get in there. You know. So I went to a drugstore. I got a flip notebook for 15 cents and a pencil, and I started. I'm going back to the front. I'm going to walk right to that guard shack. And I started writing. I said, dear God, please help me get into the MGM. I'll be a missionary later or something. Let me just, I'd stop and write. And then I'd stop and write again. And then now I'm walking faster and I'm writing faster. I'm walking and writing. I'm like, oh, I'm a writer. And I'm late. So I'm walking and I'm writing and I'm walking and writing, walking and writing. I get right to the guard shack. I look right at him. I says, hey, how you doing? He goes, hey, how you doing? And I walk right through because I was late.
Wow.
I was late.
Right. Once you were in the lot, like, what was the goal? Did you have headshots? How did you even know who to meet? What were you attempting to do as far as once, you know, you were on MGM?
I was trying to walk in. I didn't have a headshot. I didn't even know what that was. And I look over to this building, and I'm like, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to go in, you know, and I go in the hallway, open it up, and it's very small, you know, because it's 1950s, and it's a tight hallway. And I say, okay, first door on the left. So I go in, and I go, hey, and there's this heavyset Irish guy. And I go, hey, how you doing? I'm Richard Tyson. I traveled 2,000 miles to come be in the movies. And, you know, I've done little children's theater, some Shakespeare, and I have $5. I'm at the YMCA. I need to get in the movies really quick. What are we doing? He goes, what's your name? I said, Richard Tyson. He goes, Richard Tyson, get the hell out of my office. What the fuck do you think you're doing? You know, I'm like, oh, shit. And so I run. All right, first door on the right. I go in. Hey, I'm Richard Tyson. I traveled 2,000 miles to come be in the movie. I did the speech.
Yeah.
The guy goes, do you have an appointment? I'm like, no. He says, I'm calling security right now. I'm like, no, wait, let me go. You know, and I go. So I'm going, dove into another office. And then the fourth and the fifth and the sixth, I said, I got to change buildings. The cops are coming. Seventh, eighth, all said no. And the ninth, I just knocked. It was a beautiful lady. She goes, please, come on in. She goes, do you have a resume? I'm like, that's French, right? I was still a sophomore, man.
It is French.
So,
you're not wrong.
Yeah. Hey, that's right. Next morning, I was on a bus going by Fox Studios. I see two trailers. And I said, those are casting trailers. I said, I got to get off the bus. And I waited all day. Wednesday morning, I was there. Thursday morning, I was there. Friday, all the way the rest of the week. It's getting dark on Friday. And this lady leans out of the door and says, hey, let's take you to the boss. I met Jane Feinberg, Fenton Feinberg. And I said, you want to hear a monologue? She goes, that's for theater. You know, we're doing movies and TV shows. I'm like, okay, all right, but I like the monologue. It's great. I only knew two of them. And it's from Streetcar Named Desire. You know that one? Yeah. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a why at all. And Mitch, he didn't come back here with roses because I know where he is. Anyway, halfway through, she stopped and just listened and put her hand up to her mouth and just sat back and listened to it. She goes, at the end, she goes, that's pretty good. You know, I think you got it. You know, you got that sparkle in your eye and, wow. You know, and you have that determination and the chutzpah. I'm like, what's the chutzpah? She goes, that's passion.
It's not Alabama talk.
No.
Yeah. And she goes, it's passion. I said, yeah. She goes, yeah, that's been you in the parking lot all week, right? Every day we get here, we all rush over to the blinds and look through to see if you're there. And you were there.
Wow.
Every day you were there. Yeah.
Well, so they just let you stand there the whole time. And
yeah.
Wow.
It was outside of security. Well, see, you need to go away and train and come back. I went back to Alabama, graduated from Bama, Alabama, and then went to Cornell to see my master's. From Cornell, and I hitchhiked back out, went to Benton and Feinberg casting, found Jane Feinberg, and she goes, oh my God, Richard Tyson. She goes, oh my God, we always tell actors, we've been here 9 years, and we always tell actors to go away and train and come back. You're the only one ever to come back.
So you came out to LA with $100. You get out, you go back home, you refine yourself, you learn. And then you come back?
Yeah.
How many years later did you come back?
I thought it would take a year, take 2 years to graduate from Alabama.
Yeah.
And then it took 2 years to get my master's at Cornell. So 5 years.
Wow. 5 years?
After I was in her office, she goes, what are you doing for an agent? I said, I've got a list from the Guild. She goes, I know a match made in heaven. She called Bruce Willis's office, his agent. I met with them, and they got me an audition for this new movie that Spielberg was doing, 3 o'clock High. And I was living in my truck. I had my sofa up on the tailgate. You lay down the tailgate, and I've got a barbecue. I get to Universal, and the guy goes, what are you doing? What do you got? I said, I'm making a movie with Steven Spielberg. They go, all right, what are you working on? Are you fucking with us? I'm like, no, really.
You're the guy that climbed the fence a couple years ago, aren't you? You're the guy that pretended to be a writer.
Yeah. He thought I was there to fix air conditioning. Or something, you know, right. And I'm,
well, because you had done that before.
I'm like, I said, Look, I'm on the list. Just look. It's Richard Tyson. He looked down and goes, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
He goes, no, it was my first audition. I had 15 callbacks.
Oh, my 15? God.
15?
Oh, my God.
15.
Wow.
They did not offer me the role until I got another role in another movie. I picked 3 o'clock High.
Good call.
Yeah. Yeah. The director was trying to find Jerry Mitchell first because he wanted to pair him up, you know. And I'm back in L.A. Now, we're sitting, me and Jerry Mitchell, we're sitting chair to chair looking at each other, ready to do the scene. And the director says, all right, look, I want you to give it to him. Stare right through him, you know, just stare, penetrate his, you know, and his eyes or whatever, give it to him. Yeah. I said, all right. And we started the scene. And I guess he had shaved that morning. But as in the middle of the scene, I noticed that this little blood starts to right out of his chin. And it was starting to dribble down his chin.
Whoa. Mm.
And we finished the scene. And the director, Phil Juano, he goes, damn, Tyson, what are you? I said, drill a hole through him, but I didn't really mean it. You know? But I knew this guy was the one because, shit, man, he bled on cue, man. And he was great.
You're talking about Casey Shemosko, right?
Casey Shemosko, yeah.
Hi, I'm Jerry Mitchell. I'm with the school paper, the Titan. I know this is a little weird, me asking who you are standing side by side in front of the urinals.
If you're a fag.
Oh, God. Me? Oh, no, no way. What I'm trying to find out is, you are Buddy Revell, right?
You a narc?
No, I'm with the school paper.
What do you want, man? I just got to this school.
I don't want anything. That is all. All I want to do is talk to you, see? See, they told me to write this stupid little piece about you because you're the new kid on campus.
You're gonna do a stupid little piece on me? Why would I want to look stupid?
No. You're not gonna look stupid. Not at all. And incidentally, just so you know, I don't care if you do all kinds of dope and shit. I'm not anybody's narc, you know? Oh, not that I think that you do dope or anything like that. I mean, listen, why don't we forget this whole thing and pretend this never happened, okay?
You're never gonna forget this happened. I want you to understand something, Jerry. I don't like it when people know about me. In fact, I don't like it when anybody knows about me. So you can take that newspaper of yours and wipe off your dick with it. You made me mad, Jerry. Now I'm gonna have to do something to work it off.
Work it off?
You and me, we're gonna have a fight today, after school, 3 o'clock in the parking lot. You try and run, I'm gonna track you down. You go to a teacher, it's only gonna get worse. You sneak home, I'm gonna be under your bed. You and me, 3 o'clock.
Wow. Yeah, man. Wow. He was great in that movie, wasn't he?
Well, you guys are great. And so the opening to our show is the theme song to 3 o'clock High. And the reason it
are you
is,
kidding me?
Is we love that song so much. We reached out to Jim Walker, who, you know, wrote the song, performed the song, and graciously gave the song to us. He's quickly became a good friend of ours, actually, was on the show as well. And
the song's Something to Remember Me By.
Yeah. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah. And Dustin and I are equally obsessed with this movie. And I have always said that I had so much sympathy for your character because Buddy Revell, because you always struck me as this kid who was probably being abused at home or came from a very dark place. Because we all know now that a bully, any sort of bully, quote unquote, was bullied before. That's where they learned this behavior. Right. And did you have that motivation kind of going into the character and like, I mean,
well, I had studied it. I thought he was living with his mother. You know, that's what I thought. And there was no reason to say that. But he had the GTO he was driving. He's all over that harsh growing up. He was fine. He could do the math. Mm-hmm. You know, he was smart. He was in the library. You know, the book that Buddy Revell was reading in the library?
Bison
he was,
Man.
Bison Man, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, how do you know that?
Because
we're
fans of the movie.
Because we're obsessed.
Damn, you unbelievable, you guys.
You can see it. Yeah.
You were the first ones to get that, man.
Exclusive?
Out of all these years.
Well, okay, that's why you're on the greatest 80s podcast.
We don't mess around.
Show around.
Man, that's awesome, man. I'm sorry I ran on with it. I mean, Buddy doesn't talk much, but but the that's funny.
That scene is great. Yeah. That scene is great. I mean, every single scene you're in is gold. I'm just gonna say that because, and you exude this energy that. No wonder Steven Spielberg wanted you for this film, because
no one up until this point had looked like you. I think you were the, I could think of a handful of movies where there was a kind of like a bully, you know. I think of the movie My Bodyguard, where it was Adam Baldwin.
Yeah, it came out about the same time, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and he was like this kind of lovable big guy. And then you come on screen, and it's like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Who is this dude? Like, what? there is such a quality you have with your look, your style, everything.
You've already complimented it. You wanted to be it. Yeah. But the fact is that, Buddy is not one-dimensional. It's not like Buddy is just this evil character that we're just like, we're against him. Like, he has values. He has morals. And honestly, like, Jerry breaks the code of do not touch you, like, within 20 seconds of meeting you. You know what I mean? So it's like, we recently rewatched this movie. We were like, oh, you know what? I get it, man. Like, Jerry's just... go away. Like, he's a new guy. He's just been here for like 10 seconds. Right. Like, leave him alone. But, you know,
he comes in and pees by Buddy Rebell.
Yeah. It's just like,
exactly. Hey, you know, I work for the school newspaper. Yeah. He goes, if you're a, never mind. You know the words.
Oh, yeah.
No, but yeah. But it's so irritating now to watch that and be like, really? Like, there's unwritten rules of urinals that everybody knows, first of all. You know, you don't just
talk to a dude when they're going to the bathroom.
You definitely don't talk to a dude, and you definitely don't extend your hand while somebody's urinating. Be like, hey, I'm the school paper.
Yeah, this is valid even in pre-COVID times. You just don't do that.
No, you don't do that. So already I'm like, oh, come on, man.
Right?
Buddy, man, I get stopped every day. And there's a new generation of high schoolers that have seen it or are seeing it. My sister called me after she saw it. She goes, when do you want to meet? 3:00. I'm like, all right.
I was going to ask, there's a scene at the end in the school store when
we added that.
We weren't going to do a
redemption unless we had a redemption scene. I put it on the lines. We came out with that. And Buddy doesn't have to talk or anything.
No, but you smile. And you have a look in your eye.
The smallest smile in cinema history. Yeah. That's what I call it.
But it speaks volumes.
I mean, man, I tell you, it's I should give Spielberg more credit. Does he need some more?
I think he's doing just fine.
He's all right.
You can give yourself credit for that.
Hey, if you talk to him, tell him to call me, will you?
Well, next time we run into him at JP's, we'll have a whole other discussion. So.
JP.
I used to live across the street from JP's, so
we had a beer or something.
Well, we almost did. I
even better.
I wasn't able to. I was too shy to go up to you, and I didn't want to bother you because I'm not that kind of person. But I walk in and I go.
I'm one of eight kids.
Now that you know that he broke into literally every movie studio in Los Angeles, you could have just broken in, you know, been like, hey.
I was gonna order you a beer, but didn't have that opportunity. But here you are on our show, and that's more than I can ask.
It's the same thing, really.
It's the same thing.
And JP's, does it still exist?
Yeah, we always played hoops over there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Near there we were playing.
JP's is still around. I mean, obviously, what's going on right now? It's boarded up, but JP's is still there. I used to live on 11th and Wilshire, so back in the day.
Beautiful, it's paradise, man.
It is.
It is.
Well, I tell you what, I used to live in Hollywood when I came out to LA, and that same experience—not the same experience—but where I'm like, what am I doing in this place? I need to be out by the ocean.
I was in Hollywood too.
Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah,
I was in JP's. Same
thing.
Yeah, man. Played the Golden Tee. I mean, the Golden Tee.
You know, I live on 2nd Street. I have a place I'm sharing with. I'm all over the place, but
it's all good. It's all good.
You know the Sovereign Hotel on 2nd?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, 2nd and Washington. That's north of Wilshire.
Yep, beautiful.
It's paradise, man. Yeah. You walk out of the building, you feel like running, you know?
Yep.
You feel like doing something. We're shooting a movie on in Marina Del Rey.
Mm. Oh, nice.
And it's called Marina Rats.
Oh, really?
The Marina Rats. The Marina Rats. And I'm the I'm Captain Jack.
Captain Jack.
Nice. I know those Marina. Yeah. I knew some of those Marina rats a little too well. So that's a whole other podcast. But
yeah, and we don't have to write it. All we have to do is listen.
Yep. Right.
To the night before, walk around the marina. Even here, you know, we've got marinas everywhere. I've been walking through, just listening. It's like it's a universal situation. Marina rats all over the world.
It really is. It really and we definitely want to talk about what you're working on right now. But I just really want to go back quickly to 3 o'clock High and just say that movie changed trajectories, right, for you. Obviously for the director Phil Juano, it was a game changing film.
Yeah, man, that was Universal Studios. I broke into Universal Studios, you know, years before. But there's a 50-yard wall, and if you come around the ivy wall and you're right at the security gate. Not a gate, it's the cars drive in and out, and if the security is taking care of someone driving in, if you're full speed, you can get around that corner and get all the way in.
Oh my God, this should be a book on how to break into every studio.
I would have been killed if with the climate now. I would have been killed, you know. But I went the first time, and the guy's leaning against, looking right at me as I come around the corner. So I turned around and ran back, and he got my breath, and I came around again. It's just, he's talking to someone. I'm all the way in. I go in the first building on the right. I go in. I'm trying to find a place just to calm down, and I get to this. I just open this office, and nobody's in it. And so I hide under the table and lean against the desk. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, the audition where I got Kindergarten Cop was held in that room 7 years later.
That's crazy.
I swear to God.
That's crazy.
I swear to God. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, that
you know, you always look for omens. You know, when I hitchhiked from Alabama after Cornell, back to see Jane Feinberg.
Oh, you hitchhiked. We did not know that part, I don't think.
Yeah, I hitchhiked. Guy picked me up. I said, he goes, where are you going? I said, I'm going to I-10 if I can get down that way. He goes, I just got out of the Coast Guard. I got to go to Seattle. I'm like, oh, really? You're going to I-10? Great. Well, whenever you go north, just tell me and I'll get off there. That would be great. You know, I can't go straight to Seattle because I promised my sister that I'd help her move this weekend. And she's in a sleepy little town in Southern California called Santa Monica. Do you know where that is? I'm like, that's where I'm going.
Sleepy little town in Santa Monica. Yeah.
That's crazy. That omen.
That's an omen.
Yeah. Of course
for sure.
It is.
For sure.
Wait, did you share with them when you went into the Kindergarten Cop audition, did you share with them the story or were you like, I'm just going to keep this to myself?
No, I did look under the table though.
You say, is Kimball but under here?
That Ivan Reitman and Universal offered me a 5-year deal after that. $6,000 a week for 5 years.
Hey.
And we're going to do 4 movies. The first one, you'll make $250,000. Second one, then $1 million on the fourth.
Oh.
I'm like, that sounds pretty good. my agents, they have 2 different factions. One of them wanted me to go do Genghis Khan in Russia for a year, a miniseries with Charlton Heston.
Mm.
Or I could take Ivan Reitman's offer. You know the Black Tower in L.A. At Universal? All the actors know it. It's an 18-foot black tower with black windows, and you'll see it next time you go by.
Okay.
All the actors look up, say, I want to be in the penthouse. I said, well, that day they offered me all that. We had lunch at the penthouse with the Ivan Reitman and the 2 other producers of Ghostbusters. They both made $330 million apiece on that movie.
Not too shabby.
And the president of Universal, I walked in. I said, do you mind if I look out, you know, out down where the actors walk in? Because, you know,
I've seen it from down there. They go, no, go ahead. And I started going, nah, nah. And I said, no.
Yeah.
No. And I went, you can do it. You can do it. Yeah. Go for it.
Nice.
I was cheering them on.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Anyway.
You went from, before you took Kindergarten Cop, you were doing one of my fun favorite shows that I felt like should have lasted way more than 18 episodes, but Hardball, right?
Hardball, 21 episodes.
21, okay.
I think. But Hardball.
But John Astin?
Best yeah. intro, best Hard- intro ever. Best TV intro ever. Listen up now, can't you see? Dealing up a whole new game. Trying to do a little good, cleaning up the neighborhood. Cause it's going down the drain. No, it's gonna be a long, hard night.
Oh, man, I tell you.
It's got Eddie
man,
Money.
We,
come on.
We were,
Eddie Money.
We beat Cosby 3 weeks in a row.
As you should.
Yeah. And
now,
and now
even...
everyone's beating him.
Oh, I yeah. just gonna...
Rough crowd. Mean, you know. Rough crowd. Yeah.
No,
I tell you. I tell you, I got no respect. You know, I asked my mom when I was growing up. I said, Mom, what about breastfeeding? She goes, I think we should remain friends.
Oh, hey,
rough crowd. Yeah, stick to the drama, buddy. No,
but that show, I love that show personally. Love it.
My agent said, the head of NBC wants to talk to you. And I said, oh, yeah, when? Whenever you can get there. I'm like, okay. I go there. It's to go right on in to his office. I open it up, and it's bigger than a baseball diamond. It's like huge. It's like, and his desk was way across the room.
Wow.
And I came in, and he immediately stood up, grabbed two chairs, and started walking towards the center of the room where there's this skylight, and the sun was, you know, filtered down through right in the middle. He put the chairs right there. He goes, son, Richard Tyson, look, I have to tell you something right now, just to get this out of the way, before we talk about business. But that Two Moon Junction, we haven't seen heat on the screen like that since Brando did Tango.
Whoa,
I'm like, can
man.
We get someone to record this shit, man?
That's almost
on.
What Zach said to I you, mean, but different.
I mean, yeah, oh. I mean, I don't have as much clout, oh. but...
God.
That's awesome.
He goes, I want you to do a TV show. We want to give you your TV show. And he goes, if you don't like it, just throw the script away. We'll send you another one. Don't say yes because I'm the president. I'm like, all right. I was up to 5 scripts. I said, man, I better start saying yes.
Wow.
And David Hemmings was an actor, but he was a producer. Rest his soul. He called me. I'd worked with him one of my first years in the business after 3 o'clock high. And he goes, I hear you're on the short list at NBC. I'm like, you don't know how short it is, man. You know, look, I know we sent you the script. We had some other writers go, and it's a lot better. I read it. I loved it. And they picked John Astin.
Yep.
And we're trying to get Astin to team up with me doing a Hardball-like TV show and just reunite us.
Oh, like now.
I called it, I pitched to Comcast. They go, and what? I said, you know, I'm a writer, too. They go, oh, you are? I said, yeah, I improv the first 4 days we shot. You know, they didn't have a script. And they said, what's your top three? I said, well, I've got A Crazy Vet back home. I've got a Casino picture and a Civil War picture. Oh, honey, we love the Civil War. Why don't you send that to us? He goes, what else you got? Oh, they came back and they said, well, we just did Birth of a Nation. So we're going to hold off. The financiers of Birth of a Nation, you know, because it was bombed because, yeah, whatever.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird how the news comes up just opening weekend, you know?
Yeah, it's a little...
has to be something. But anyway, they said, I said, I have a TV show. They go, oh, really? What is it? I said, Bama PI. You know Magnum PI? Well, I got Bama PI. Mm. And they're like,
why not?
What? That sounds pretty good, you know? And me and Roddy Piper were very close friends. Mm, and I wrote it for him.
That would have been great.
And I was playing, and so we were reading it on his dining room table, and I was playing Bama. That's my nickname out there in L.A. Everyone from Alabama is called Bama, but really, that's what they call me. The Farrelly brothers, they said, when I do good, they go, Bama, that was great. And I said, but if I fuck it up, it's Richard Tyson. Yeah, that's so awesome. So I wrote in the character for Roddy Piper, Red. Mm, Red.
Nice.
Instead of Roddy Piper. Yeah. And on page 23, he stops reading. He goes, all right, what is this Red shit?
Yeah.
I said, I was trying to give you a character so you could act. You know, you could actually build a character. You know, and I said, oh, you wanted to be Rod? Yeah, I know. He didn't say yes or no, but we just started reading again.
And, well, you can't call him Hottie, I guess.
And so, so we called him Rod for the rest of the show. All right. Rod.
Okay.
You know? Well, he passed away, you know. I realized after reviewing it that I've been trying to figure out who would be good to play, and I realized that I love Roddy Piper so much, I gave him all the punchlines.
Mm.
And so I figured I would change the character from Red to Bama. Let that be his name, and I'd play Roddy Piper.
Yep, fair enough.
And I would get somebody that's straight and narrow by the book. And I'm thinking, I haven't called him yet. We've been in touch on Facebook. John Ashton from Hardball.
Yep.
What the hell?
Yeah.
And
great.
I think
actor.
He would be great.
Yep.
Fantastic, man. I learned so much. He taught me so much. I mean, guy was great for me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, look, he Beverly Hills Cop, Midnight Run, Some Kind of Wonderful, Hardball. Like, he's just fantastic actor. Yep.
Oh, man. He really is. And he could, and you know, Red, I wrote the character, he comes up with some kind of invention every week to get the bad guy.
Mm.
Like in the first show, they're up on the bad guy and they're getting closer to him. All of a sudden, a dart hits him in the neck, and you cut back to Red or Bama, and he's pulling down the blowgun that he just hit the guy with.
That's great. I love it.
He just, you know, so we hope to get that one going too.
It needs to happen. There's plenty of content out there nowadays. If whoever's listening to this can make that happen, it really should, because the Hardball, I think you were hot off of Two Moon Junction with Sherilyn Fenn.
Yeah.
And that was a very steamy, you know, sultry, like kind of a 9.5 weeks,
yeah.
Last Tango in Paris, that kind of vibe.
I always dreamed of having a storybook wedding, and now I am. The shoes and the hats. It's perfect.
April. I've known a May and a June, but never an April.
I didn't just show up here by mistake. You invited me. It's all right there in your eyes.
And then you jump right into Hardball and you're like back into this buddy comedy action show, which was great. Like I recorded every episode every week. So.
We had 10,000 letters each week to sign and send back. I was like, I thought that was my job. I'm sitting there at a desk all day.
Fan letters?
Yeah, fan letters.
Wow. Yeah.
How many were from Zach? Were just like 8,000?
You never wrote me back. You never wrote me back.
Well, I got about 5,000 out of 10,000 every day. I don't know how I did that.
And is that part of your contract when something like that happens? Or you were just like, no, I really just really appreciate the fans.
Yeah, you don't have to do it. Yeah. No.
Right. Nobody's making it.
I was just trying to get to everyone.
Yeah, that's so
we
nice.
We were doing 17-hour days.
Oh, man.
For 10 months.
People ask
me,
that's brutal.
How's that show doing for you? It's killing me.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
By the way, the president of NBC, Tartikoff, he had a heart attack and died at the end of the season. That's why it was pet projects for the new president comes in, you know?
Yep.
And we were gone, we were gone in a second.
Yeah.
And
it's unfortunate.
And it's just crazy that the guy that coming in must have been an ego or something, or maybe that was the only time slot that new presidents can get until they prove themselves or something. But wow.
I mean, what you're talking about is like, the new president has to come in and make their own mark on things. You know, they just got to get rid of, that's the old guy's stuff. This is what I am. This is what I can do. Yeah.
And that's
clean slate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, though, when I think about, when we think about your career and where you started out and, you know, looking at your little IMDb and you got 137 credits to your name and it's pretty phenomenal to look at all of the stuff you've done. I was going to say though, like, you know, you go into like Kindergarten Cop. I was the first time I saw you as a legit villain with not a conscience, I guess, in a weird way. And I didn't like that at first. I'm like, no, I don't like this. I don't like this Richard Tyson. I don't like this version of Richard. You know, Cullen is such an evil, devious dude.
Oh, excuse me. This is your lucky day. I have a better idea. I'll pay you twice what he's charging. I promised my boy I'd get him one of these.
Yeah, well, I'd love to help you, but my kid's been bugging me for one of these ever since Christmas. Sorry.
I'll pay you four times what it's worth. You can get your kid something even better.
Sorry. Hey, listen, can you gift wrap it? It's a birthday present.
Sure, yeah. Hannah, could you wrap that for me?
I tried. No harm in trying.
But
Daryl, I'm sorry. I wanted to give you a second chance. 200 cash.
What is wrong with you, mister?
I'm still not getting through to you, am I, Daryl?
I got to imagine that was really fun to play, right?
Yeah, you know, I 3 o'clock high, all Buddy was trying to do was graduate. That's all he was doing. That's why he's in the library. That's why he's doing the math problem. He fucked with Jerry a little bit, like, show me your answers. But when he gets to the principal's office, he can do it, you know. Kindergarten Cop, I just wanted my boy back, and I'd do anything to get him back. Ivan Reitman, we're doing the scene. I said, when I get the boy, I finally get him. I get him in the nurse's station. I want to sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star to him. He goes, no, you're the bad guy. You're not doing that. I'm like, I want to do it. No, don't do it. Three takes. I didn't do it. The fourth take, I grabbed his hand. I said, see, we had the same hand. See, Twinkle, I pat my face with his little hand. I go, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And it's in the movie.
Yeah, hell
right,
yeah.
Right.
As it should be.
Yeah. After that take. Ivan Reitman goes after that take. You had to do it, didn't you? You had to do it. I'm like, yeah, I had to. And then he used it. It was great.
It's me. Don't you remember Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star? Look. See? We have the same kind of hands. Don't you remember?
I'm not my father. My father lives in France.
Oh, your mother told you that. But that's not true, Dominic. I'm your father.
I was going to tell you, we just had actor Hart Bochner on our show, who a lot of people know him from the movie Die Hard, and his character Ellis. And he was talking about,
oh yeah,
he was talking about how in that movie they wanted him to play it a certain way. And he's like, no, this guy's supposed to be like a sleazeball scumbag, and that's how I'm going to play him. And then finally, right, the director was like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And then when the producers saw it and they laughed and they said, this is great, he's like, okay, let's do that. Mm-hmm. So this is another case of that where you're like, no. We got to do it this way.
That's right. It's a heart. I call it the heart, not the gut, but you know, they're pretty close. There's a place that I run around here. It's a little country church, and it has a sign on it, and they never change it. It says, guard your heart, for all that you do flows from it.
Nice.
Yeah.
I kind of been protecting my heart on the streets of Hollywood way back in the day. And
yep.
Yeah.
And how long have you been living back in Alabama now?
My father died about 3 years ago, and the way I found acting was I was kicked off Eddie Stanky's baseball team way back in the day at the University of South Alabama, which my father and mother wrote the bill to create the university.
Wow.
South Alabama, because they had 8 kids. They couldn't afford to send them all off to college.
So 8 kids? Yeah, let's
build one here.
My God.
8 kids in 10 years. How about that?
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Sounds... Oh, that even hurts
yeah,
us.
Yeah. I'm sorry. My wife's had one, and I watched that, and that is not a road we want to revisit anytime soon. Yowzers.
Okay. So... I felt sorry for myself. I walked across the street. I saw this antebellum house that had been brick by brick brought out to Westmobile from downtown. And there was a girl going up the steps. I said, what is this? A museum? She goes, no, it's a theater. Oh, so it's a T-H-E-A-T-R-E theater. Oh, I've never been in one of those. Okay. All right. So I said, what is it? She goes, I'm auditioning. I'm like, that's a tryout, right? You know, she goes, yeah. And I said, well, what's it about? She says, it was called Butterflies Are Free. And it's about a young boy trying to go to Manhattan and get out on his own from his parents and vasectomy or something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. And he's blind. I said, well, can I watch? Because, yeah, but go way up, you know, so you don't, don't bother anybody. I'm like, okay, all right. So I went way up and I watched everyone audition for 2.5 hours, every role. And finally, the director and the stage manager were about to leave. And I said, hey, can I try that? They couldn't see me. They said, come on down to the light. Well, at 18, we're all pretty, man, you know?
Yeah.
So I come down in the light and he goes, yeah, why don't you come down here? And I'm like, all right. I said, I got a question. He says, oh, good. What is it? I said, the play is about a blind boy, right? I never saw anyone try to act blind. He goes, you're absolutely right. Can you do it? And, you know, I stared off like I was, you know, too many beers or something, you know? And I'm,
yeah. To like, play blind.
Yeah. He goes, that's pretty good. He goes, would you read this? I said, I can, I'm blind. You know? And I nice. Got the role. Nice. I played the lead role.
Nice method.
I went from that baseball to
are you talking good is Butterfly God, Butterflies Are Free was Goldie Hawn in that movie?
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Okay. That's it. Butterflies Are Free.
And then Eddie Albert, I guess, was the male lead in that. So back in the day.
I didn't notice him.
Yeah, no. I mean, come on. When she's in a movie, you don't typically notice the other, unless it's Kurt Russell, I guess. But
yeah,
you're shooting a movie soon with Dolph Lundgren, right?
That's right. It's called
It's called Kindergarten Cop Part 3.
Castle.
Yeah. No.
You know they remade Kindergarten Cop
with Dolph Lundgren. Yeah. I
what?
Yeah, and Bill
was
Bell,
it?
And Bill Bellamy. Yeah, Dolph. Duck. Yeah.
Wait, that. Yeah. Ugh,
yeah,
that
no,
makes no
I,
sense.
I didn't know that.
Wait, so
well, no,
there's a topic of conversation for you and Delph. Like,
wow, I did not know that.
Yeah,
and why? Yeah. Why would they do that?
Because Universal was doing that. They were just taking whatever movies.
It was released like a theater release.
No, VOD. You know
what?
Yeah,
straight. Yeah,
you've seen it. You've seen it.
I watched it. Yeah.
Of course.
I didn't watch it. There were terrorists in it, weren't there?
Bill Bellamy.
Yeah, it was.
No.
Yeah, there were. I think there were terrorists in it. Yeah.
It wasn't Kindergarten Cop.
No, it wasn't.
Something similar.
You know what it was? What it was terrorists. To me, anyways. And I love Dolph. Nothing's don't get me sense. Wrong. It has nothing to do with Dolph. What it was a movie. Kindergarten Cop understood kids, in my opinion. I taught kindergarten for 15 years. One of the reasons I wanted to teach kindergarten in this weird way was because of the movie Kindergarten Cop. I'm not even joking.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I love
That's
kids.
Cool.
You gotta understand kids, and there's a way of. I don't feel like this movie really got kids. It took bullet points, you know. Oh, kids have allergies nowadays. Let's make a joke out of allergies. No,
allergies are hilarious.
They are. They can be, right? Yeah. No, they're not. You know. And but here you go. Like Kindergarten Cop had this quality about it. You got one story that focuses on your character, which is really dark and it's really intense. And then you've got this other story. And I don't think there's been a movie ever since, to be honest with you, where you take this light side, this, you know, juxtaposition between darkness and light, and you've got this really silly element of like, oh my gosh, the kids are great. And the kids feel real. The things they say are real. And I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah, yeah.
The things they do are real. And then you've got your element of
girls
like,
have vaginas and men have penises.
My former teaching partner, she taught that little guy, and he was making Kindergarten Cop at the time when she was his teacher. And he's like, I'm making this movie about you, Mrs. Romero. And she's like, I don't think it's going to be about me. But, but then, yeah, like you said, your character wants nothing but your son back. And as a parent, I understand that. But then you just were way off the cuckoo town bridge, you know. And
when we met with the president and Ivan Reitman, upstairs, they love Kindergarten Cop. They go, look, Arnold looks bad for shooting you. I'm like, well. Because, so we're going to spend the next 2 weeks and make you evil. And so we came up with shooting the guy by the dumpster. Did you tell anyone? I'm not stupid, Mr. Crisp. And I said to Ivan, I said, I think after he says I'm not stupid, Mr. Crisp, I think I should put one in his belly, you know, and wait for him to feel it. And, you know, you're not, and then shoot him again and kill him. He goes, look, Tyson, look, this is a comedy, man. You're way overdoing it. Don't look, come on. These are kids, you know. I'm like, no, I think, and that's exactly the way we did it. So we shot a guy by the dumpster. I'm in front of the judge with the chains on my hand, you know, and with the orange jumpsuit. I'm the bad guy. He states it. Then Arnold throws me through the door and interrogates me. And then I sass him at the end. My wife left for the money. Yours left because she couldn't stand the sight of you.
Yeah, I know all about you, Kimball. Without me, you wouldn't even have a life. My old lady left because of the money. Yours left because she just couldn't stand the sight of you.
Now that's three things to make me. And they go, what else are we going to do? I'm like, I got an idea. I don't know. You know, ideas come from a group, really, you know, but we came up with the idea to burn down. We could burn down the elementary school library.
That'll do it.
Like, what? Yeah. Da, da, da. Arnold can now shoot me. That's great. You know the scene where the kid, I got the gun on the kid. Cullen Crisp has the gun on the kid. I was acting my ass off. I was like, I pulled the gun away. I'm like, I can't shoot my kid. And I'm fucked. And I got the gun again. It's get away. Back out, you know. And I'm like, oh, I can't do it. They cut all that shit out. And just like, gun on his head. Gun on his head. I'm like, okay. Come on, boys.
Yeah, it sounds like there was a lot more depth there that would have been, I would have loved to have seen that on screen, that's for damn sure.
And then a damn rat just reaches up right when I'm about to kill Arnold.
Yeah, that ferret or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the ferret, you know, ferret. It's like, I'm about to win here, and the moralistic ferret is going to jump up and get me right then, you know.
Why don't you let the boy go now? The boy is mine! He's my boy! You get your own goddamn family! Ah!
Well, it is a kid's movie.
Yeah.
It is a kid's movie.
Ferret's always
I mean, it could have been so great if he hugged his boy and ran out and got in the car with his mother. Now, that's another subject. Carol Baker.
Oh, man, she's wow. so good.
She was great, yeah. wasn't she?
You had some devious scenes yeah. with her.
Yeah.
That's really
twisted.
You know, we're at the pharmacy and she's got all this stuff for the boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like a rectal thermometer. And it's like, mother, look, I was never sick. She goes, that's why you were never sick. And I look at the pharmacist, how do you argue with that?
That's so good. Well, I was, yeah. you know, you said, you know, how do you argue with that? How do you argue with the fact that, you know, you've given us a lot of your time on the show and taken us down this journey of your career? And I know you haven't even touched upon so much. Maybe down the road we have you back on. And in fact, maybe we have you in person the next time you're shooting in L.A., which would be really fantastic. I'm just putting it out there.
All right. That'd be great,
yeah.
man.
Yeah. L.A., for its shortcomings, has some really, like you said, Santa Monica. You talk about, you get to that ocean and you breathe in that air. I've got a friend of mine who, from Taos, New Mexico, never saw the ocean in his entire life, lived on the Pueblo out there. He's in his late 70s now. Comes out to L.A. for the first time, goes out to Santa Monica, sits on the beach and cries. I never seen him cry. I've known him for over 10 years. He looks amazing. At me and he goes, you don't understand how powerful this is until you've seen it for the first time. And I said, you're right.
It really is. Yeah.
And Richard, sincerely, thank you for being so candid, so just forthcoming and everything. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the show. Really has meant a lot.
Thank you, Richard.
My pleasure.
And
totally.
We won't say goodbye. We'll say to be continued.
Okay. Maybe we'll get you guys out to the marina.
Marina Rats.
Absolutely.
Love
marina
it.
Rats. Sounds
okay.
good. Thank you very much, and enjoy the weather.
Yeah.
Stay safe.
Oh, you mother.
How can you argue with that?
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four...
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.